With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You are listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find all of our episodes over on iTunes, as well as on social media. Just search for Dog Works Radio over there, and do us a favor, give us a review over there on iTunes. It helps out on our rankings and how folks can find us there. We're taking a break from our Iditarod musher coverage. We've done that since Iditarod has ended just about a month or so ago now. And we're talking to a gentleman that is doing something on the other end of a sled dog's life. After they're retired, he's in the process of starting a nonprofit organization called The Last Checkpoint Sled Dog Kennels. They're located in the Cleveland, Ohio area. His name is Eddie Hurtlandy, I believe I said that correctly, and he is currently with one dog named Trouble, who came from an Iditarod kennel up here in Alaska. We're going to talk about that and who he got Trouble from, and he's coming up in a couple of weeks to get another sled dog that is retired and going to be part of his kennel there in the Cleveland area. And before we forget, his website is ghaw.org for folks that may not know what that is. G means right and haw means left in sled dog language. So without further ado, we're going to introduce Eddie. Eddie, how's it going?
Oh, things are going great. Great to talk to you, Robert.
Likewise. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you hail from, how you got involved with mushing, you know, as a fan, and what got you started on this whole nonprofit deal to help out all these retired sled dogs.
Oh, sure. It's kind of a crazy story, just like probably most mushers have crazy stories. I'm originally from the Cleveland, Ohio area, born and raised, lived here all my life. Kind of ironic because growing up, we were always taught about Balto. He's a fixture here in Cleveland. In school, we'd take trips to the Natural History Museum to see Balto. So it was always, it's just kind of part of the culture here. Everybody knows about it because, you know, it was a big deal. How I came back to the whole sled dog world, I always had Rottweilers and also have a little Bichon Shih Tzu that's almost 13 years old. Both Rottweilers have since passed on, and last year about March or April, I had to put my last Rottweiler down, and I was just going to hang out with Dickens and move on with my life. Dickens had other thoughts. He didn't like being alone. He would, I'd come home, he'd be shaking uncontrollably, and I was like, well, I guess I need to get another dog, and, you know, I didn't want to raise another puppy. I knew I wanted to adopt. I didn't know what to get, and so the quest kind of began from that point. Did lots of research online, looked at greyhounds, looked at husky rescues, and I just stumbled on the sled dog thing just by happenstance from searching online. And it just kind of piqued my curiosity because I kept thinking back to when I was young and the whole Balto story. So I started searching, looking at various sled dog rescues, and, you know, a lot of them don't want to ship a dog halfway across the country or the world, as it were. So then I started Googling mushers and searching for mushers that had dogs available for adoption. I happened upon Karin Hendrickson, saw her website. She had some dogs available for adoption. It was very important to me to adopt a dog from just the right musher. I'm probably doing a very poor job of explaining it, but you know, the dog that you're going to end up with is a byproduct of the musher that raised them and bred them and raced them. And after emailing back and forth over a few weeks and talking on the phone, I knew it was the right choice. So that kind of began the quest, and she shipped Trouble off to me in May of 2015, so we're coming up on a year now. It's been an experience, to say the least, but I just became amazed with these guys.
So I guess my first question to you is, being so far from, you know, the mushing world, so to speak, I guess the closest race to you would be in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So you're sort of in a definitely urban-type area compared to where a lot of mushers keep their dogs. And you say on your bio that you plan to house and care for up to 30 sled dogs. What is your facility like that you're going to have in the near future? I know you only have one now and are going to add dogs very gradually, but what are your plans in the future? How are these dogs going to sort of live out their days, so to speak, compared to what they're used to, you know, living, whether it be tethered or in kennels or whatever they've done their entire lives, and now they're moving into a more urban-type society?
You know, that's a really great question. I'm actually I'm about 30 miles south of Cleveland. The property we're looking at now is going to be even farther south than that. So there's a lot of farmland, rolling farmland. It's not too difficult to come across 20, 30, 40 acres. The vision that we kind of started with was, and it all started with the dog park that we take Trouble to. It's a 7-acre fully enclosed dog park. It's got woods, trails, a pond. And early on with Trouble, he's a shy, spooky fellow. Takes a while to warm up, but he's very sweet. And when I started taking him to that dog park, it was like the floodgates opened and he was himself again. And that's what really drove me to say, wait a minute, you know, why can't we have a facility like this for 10, 20, 30 sled dogs? And with the Balto connection in Cleveland, there's a lot of interest. Every time I go someplace with Trouble, the first thing they say is that a coyote or is that a wolf? Because, you know, he's got that little bit of a look about him, and people in Cleveland aren't used to seeing a sled dog. And the minute I tell them he's a retired sled dog, the look on their face changes. Little kids will say, oh, like Balto? So that goes back to a large property. We want to have a fully enclosed facility, but we want to set it up like a dog yard would be in Alaska, with tethers for when they're eating and sleeping at night. Kind of our vision is to do field trips, educational visits to the facility, help them learn a little bit more about the dogs. I think there's a lot of misconceptions and misunderstandings about, you know, who they are, what they do. You know, the whole, you know, you can't make them do anything they don't want to do is so true. And as I've started doing a little more outreach and doing some classroom visits, people are seeing that, and you can see their faces light up. So that's kind of how the whole thing started and what our vision is.
I have to commend your work for sure. You know, being a musher, we have 38 sled dogs or so in our kennel, and we have several dogs that are over the age of 10 that we've had. When we moved up, we got several dogs from other mushers who, you know, they didn't have a spot for them on their main team, whether they're Iditarod mushers, et cetera. So we ended up with those guys to begin to build our kennel, to train our younger dogs that we were bringing up, to train them to be sled dogs. And they've done a remarkable job with that. And we have many dogs in our kennel that are quote-unquote retired, but they still run. And I know with the bigger Iditarod, and what we do is we typically keep all of our dogs. They sort of kind of retire here and sort of live out their days. But for the bigger Iditarod kennels, the kennels that are training to be very competitive in Iditarod, they have a cycle of dogs that is about 6 years. And we've talked a lot about it on our show, about sort of that that peak Iditarod time for dogs. We see it with Lance Mackey. We see it with Ali Zirkel. We see it with all of the top mushers, where they'll have a peak of several good years with their dogs, and then they have to rebuild. And whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, those guys that can no longer make the team have to have a spot to go to, whether that is doing what we do at our kennel, or they move on to pet homes or rescues, et cetera, sort of like you're doing. So it opens up a spot for a heck of a lot of sled dogs out there that need a home after their time is over. And you can think about it how you would think of all of our professional athletes, human athletes, and what they do after retirement. You know, do they get other jobs? Do they move on to do other things, et cetera? So there's still a heck of a lot of life for these dogs, isn't there, Eddie?
Oh, there absolutely is. I just watching his personality, and it's always been there, but you know, that's a pretty traumatic experience for him to be shipped from Anchorage to Cleveland, Ohio. So as it's not so much him learning, it's him adapting to life here, but it's watching his personality come out and all the silly little goofy things he does. You know, he acts like he's a 4-year-old and he's almost 10 years old. You know, and on the activity side, I've made a connection with a local woman. Her name's Amanda Provoznik, and she's a local dog trainer. She specializes in wolves, wolf hybrids, and huskies. She actually has 4 Ed Steelster dogs, and she does a lot of recreational mushing. And she's actually going to be helping me out a little bit with on the educational side and also on the training side, get everything set up and provide these dogs, you know. We don't own these dogs. We're caring for them. They're always going to be the musher's dog, but they need to have a place where they can run around, play, just be themselves, be active, and be in a well-adjusted pack. It's important.
Right. And you had mentioned how when you took Trouble to the dog park for the first time, you know, he lived out his entire life being with his pack, so to speak, and he was around, you know, groups of dogs his entire life, probably since puppyhood. And then all of a sudden, he's around another pack, whether it be at a dog park or when you begin to get more dogs at your place. It becomes a very pack-oriented situation that sled dogs thrive on. They definitely tend to do much better when they're around their own kind, so to speak. But on the other hand, I have seen lots and lots of sled dogs that make very good, you know, single dog pets, where they are retired out or given or sold or however they get to other homes, and they do very well there. And, you know, they don't necessarily have to mush anymore, or they might be on recreational teams or ski jour teams or, you know, bike buddies or hiking buddies, that sort of thing. They still have a very active lifestyle even after the mushing world has passed them by. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. It's you know, we've done a little bit of recreational mushing. I bought a scooter. He's not real interested in it. You know, he was the omega of the pack. He's a little spooky guy. You know, he was never a lead dog. He'll pull in spurts, and then sometimes he'll trot next to me, you know. But it's all what he wants to do. I never try pushing him to do anything he doesn't want to. I've noticed that one of the biggest stimuli that really excites him, believe it or not, riding in the car is the most exciting thing for him.
Nice.
We get in the car and he bounces around. He displays a lot of the behavior and makes a lot of the sounds a dog getting ready to run will do. And he's in the backseat of the car. So it's very entertaining.
Good stuff there for sure. We're talking to Eddie Hertlundy today. He is the, I guess, proprietor or organizer of a up-and-coming new nonprofit called The Last Checkpoint Retired Sled Dogs. His website is ghaw.org, and currently he has one sled dog. His name is Trouble. He comes from Karin Hendrickson up here from Willow, Alaska, right in pretty much our backyard, and he hopes to start a facility in the near future for up to 30 sled dogs in the Cleveland area, outside of Cleveland, on some farmland up there. So, Eddie, you had reached out to me the other day talking about some educational-type programs and the amount of people that are contacting you. Lots of people want to know about sled dogs, about your organization, what you're doing there. Tell us about your program. On your website, it talks about your school visits and what you're doing currently with Trouble. What's sort of the outline of that program, and how can people get more interest or more information on that?
Well, they can contact me through the website, jihaw.org. My email address is edward@jihaw.org. It just started with a neighbor's nephew whose class was studying Iditarod, and she reached out to me, and she's like, would you be interested in taking, you know, Trouble to the classroom? And I'm like, sure. I was a little, you know, a little worried. He does really great around kids, but I didn't know if he'd go into shutdown mode in that kind of environment. But we got in the classroom, and his ears were up, his tail was wagging. So I let him off leash. I don't necessarily, you know, I'm not a mushing expert. I'm not an Iditarod expert, but, you know, I know Trouble, and I think I kind of am able to bridge that gap. These students are so well educated on Iditarod. There's a lot of teachers in the area that are following the curriculum. So they ask a lot of questions that are very easy to translate into Trouble's behavior, how he acts. I let him off leash. He walks around the classroom. Early on, we did a lot of targeting training with him to kind of pull him out of his shell. And he's kind of made that a habit now. Wherever we go, he has to target everybody's hand wherever we go. And he gives a little touch with his nose. So we kind of talk about the life that he led, where he came from. But it always goes to what his life is like now and understanding his behavior. So I think it's a little bit different than your typical Iditarod classroom presentation.
And as you mentioned, so many kids, especially in the early grades, kindergarten through third or fourth grade, they spend the month of March talking about and learning about Iditarod through a program that has just exploded in the last decade or so. They use the principles of education, whether it be math, science, reading, etc., and they're applying it to the Iditarod, so it makes a wonderful curriculum-based type learning experience for the kids. But what about, Eddie, what about older folks, whether it be adults or older students in school? Aside from the Balto story, or aside from what they've seen in sort of popular culture about sled dogs, what does the folks of Northern Ohio know about mushing other than what they've seen on television?
Oh, they really don't know a lot. I'm always amazed. Part of our routine, we walk 6 miles every day, 3 in the morning, 3 every night. And then we always get in the car and we go somewhere. I take them to every store I can, even if dogs aren't allowed, I don't care. I just take them in. If they can kick me out, they can. But once they see how sweet he is, it's always the kids that know more than the parents do because of all of that curriculum that Iditarod has developed and is being used in the classroom. But the parents are even more amazed by him and his story. I'm sure you hear it all the time. Isn't he too skinny to be a sled dog? I thought they were bigger than that. You get a lot of really interesting questions as you're moving along with him. I can't stop for anything less than a half hour once somebody says, what kind of dog is that? And I say, oh, it's an Alaskan Husky. And then, of course, it's, well, what's that? Well, he's a retired sled dog. And then it goes on, and they want to know what his life was like. You know, sometimes you'll always get the question, oh, I can't believe they make them pull like that. And I explain to them, you can't make them pull like that. That's what they're bred to do. They're amazing athletes. They're marathon athletes. And they wouldn't be happy doing anything else.
Right. You know, I think this is a good question for you, Eddie. You know, you had mentioned that you've had Rottweilers for quite a while and then a smaller breed of dog with a Bichon. So you know the pet dog scope of things. You've been around pet dogs for a long time. You know, when I ask this question to mushers, they've been around mushing dogs for a long time, so it's difficult for them to compare and contrast between the two. But can you do so? Because you do often hear those questions. Oh, he's not like my lab. He's not like my golden retriever. He's too skinny. He's too small. you know, he looks this way or he acts that way. How can you compare and contrast between an athlete like a sled dog, the Alaskan Husky per se, and, you know, your typical pet, whether it be that Rottweiler or even the smaller Bichon?
You know, I get that question a lot. And the students, when I visit classrooms, they ask that question a lot because quite often they have their own pet dog. And they want to know what he's like at home. You know, my Rottweilers, they're a very clingy dog. They pick a person, typically, that they really want to be around. And they're always there in your face. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. They're wonderful dogs. You have to be very, very consistent and have them raised the proper way. The Bichon Shih Tzu, he always grew up with bigger dogs. He's pretty mellow, though. He's almost 13. Trouble, and that's what I always try telling people, he's not your typical pet dog. And I think that's true even of Siberian Huskies. You'll always hear, oh, well, they're more like a cat than a dog. He's very independent. Right now he's upstairs. When I brought him home, I had a crate set up for him. He was a little bit panicked. He ran around the house. He found my bed. He didn't come down all day, and I put the crate away. I've never crated him, even though he was primarily an outside dog. He's not in your face. He doesn't seek affection, maybe like your typical lab. It's going to sound goofy because I hate to humanize dogs, but it's like we're roommates, you know? We're buds.
Right.
He comes downstairs sometimes and does his goofy little routine, or he'll come over to me and he'll target me with his nose because he wants to be petted a little bit. And then he goes off and he does his own thing. He's managed to rearrange my furniture a little bit on occasion when he's bored.
Right.
He dragged a 30-pound ottoman across my living room so he could lay on it in front of the front window. It's not your typical pet dog. He doesn't know how to play with toys. He's pretty much scared of balls. If you roll a ball, he'll run away from it. So you can't expect the typical pet experience. But for me, that's even more rewarding because when you make those little connections, it's because he truly wants to.
And, you know, what I found, Eddie, and I don't know if this is the case with Trouble, but for the years I've had sled dogs, very little have I had to worry about health. I think that they're bred to be healthy. They're bred to be very, strong in terms of fighting things off. And you know, their entire body is different than the overbred Labrador Retriever or Golden Retriever or whatever other, you know, dog of the day. Have you found that with Trouble as well? He's just a little bit different in terms of health compared to the typical pet dog.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that drew me to him in the first place and the breed. You know, both Rottweilers had health issues and were put down, you know, one at not even 10 and one quite a bit younger than that. And, you know, and I attribute it to the overbreeding. And it's unfortunate. So as I read prior to obtaining Trouble what they're bred for, you know, health, temperament, performance, that's always what I tell people. They have to get along with the team. They have to be healthy. They have to be able to perform. And he's all of those things. Probably my biggest challenge is some intestinal issues when he first got here because, of course, we've got some things here that really don't live in Alaska. I don't think coccidia is a problem in Alaska, but here it is. So you just have to really stay on top of him when he first got here. I have a really great vet. She's an equine vet. She comes to the house if I need her to. But once he got through all that and got used to life in Ohio and got the food dialed in, which is another challenge, determining the right food that's going to work with him and not upset his stomach, very healthy dog.
Right. You know, people ask all the time, how in the world do you afford the vet bills for all of your dogs? And, you know, we just don't have to go. Like, you know, I hear especially my friends that have just your pet dogs, oh, we had to take, you know, Max to the vet because he was sick or he had ear infections or he had this or that. They're always at the vet. Now, that's not to say that sled dogs do not come down with things or particular dogs aren't less healthy than others. That does occur. But by and large, I think that they're pretty stout or pretty, akin, I guess, to being a pretty healthy breed. So, Eddie, we have about 5 minutes left. I want to find out what's next. You had mentioned that, you know, you have a vision to do this, and it's going to be a vision that's going to take a little while. But I know here in just a little while you're traveling up to Alaska to get another dog. Is that going to be your first time up to Alaska? And what do you expect with this dog, and how is he or she going to fit into your vision and your kennel as it sits right now?
Well, I've never been to Alaska before, so this is going to be my first trip. I really don't have any expectations other than I kind of want to just soak it all in and observe and watch and see the world they live in. I'm going to be adopting Sable. She's 8 years old. I think the second dog is going to be easier than the first dog, to be honest with you, because there's automatically going to be a little pack dynamic that's going to occur there. She's very sweet, very shy, and that's kind of the niche that I see myself moving towards is, you know, of course, if you have the gregarious, well-adjusted, retired sled dog, it's probably very easy to find them a home. And I think there's a lot of people that maybe wouldn't be prepared to accept a dog that's shy, that's spooky, that, you know, you just have to let them slowly come along. You know, short term, my goal right now is I have a 3-year plan where we will have our property. I can probably get away with about 4 dogs where I'm at now until the Homeowners Association kicks me out. So hopefully that'll be okay.
Right.
So about 3 years we'll have the property. And then between year 3 and year 6, we'll be developing it into a facility where people can actually come. We can have school field trips. We can give tours of the facility, give demonstrations in addition to the outreach in schools and the community.
So is your vision is to have these guys live out their days with you, or are you going to try to place them in other homes after they've, you know, readjusted to that type of lifestyle compared to what they're used to? What is your plan for the dogs after they're there, other than sort of that educational component or training component?
Well, you know, the way I see it, the educational piece of it is a way to keep the organization going. Of course, we're always going to be open to rehoming a dog if it's appropriate for that dog. As I said earlier, it's still the musher's dog. So, you know, if I had a musher's dog and was contemplating, okay, maybe even this life isn't right for that dog and we were going to rehome it, of course I would have to, I would be going back with the musher and discussing it with them first because, like I said, it's still their dog. So,
right. Good stuff for sure. Eddie, we have about 2 minutes left. Anything else you want to mention? We've mentioned how to get in contact with you on your website. Do you guys have a Facebook page? I know you're active on Twitter. That's where you and I have talked a couple of times. How do folks get in touch with you and your kennel there?
Well, they can visit us on the website. That's ghaw.org. They can email me at edward@ghaw.org. You know, any questions that anybody might have, any ideas people might have, you know, we're open to anything, support. We have a You Caring fundraiser right now going on that's on our website. Right now the funding is just to help care for trouble. We've already funded the transportation costs of bringing the next dog down and getting our nonprofit in place, so there's going to be all the legal and business fees associated with that.
Good stuff for sure. And you do not have a Facebook page right now, right?
No, we don't have a Facebook page. I've been just doing the Twitter and the website and kind of the Zen approach.
There you go. You know, it's hard to handle with all those channels. It just seems that your phone begins to become your life with a Facebook page and everything else. Eddie, anything else you want to mention before we close? I know this was sort of a spur-of-the-moment type interview, but I was glad to have you.
No, I was really, really happy that you offered to have me on your show. This has been really great. You know, I really look forward to speaking with you in the future. I know you said you're going to be doing your roller coaster tour this summer. You're going to be nearby, so we'd love to have you stop by and pay a little visit.
Sounds good. Well, Eddie, thank you very much for joining us today. Eddie Hertlandy is our guest today. Ghaw.org is his website. The Last Checkpoint Retired Sled Dogs. go check it out. You can see some pictures of Trouble there and what they're doing with school tours and how you can become more involved. Even if you're there in the Cleveland area, I know we have a lot of teachers and other folks that listen to our show all over the country. So if you do live there in the upper Midwest and are looking for a very unique program for your students, I think this is the way to go. I don't think there's a whole lot of mushers that live up there in northern Ohio, southern Michigan area. So give them a call, check them out, and hopefully we can connect you guys to each other. Eddie, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Robert. It was great speaking with you.
Thank you very much. So until next time, we'll see you guys later. Goodbye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.